You're listening to the New Utah Podcast with your hosts, Bree.
People can say my name and I still don't pay attention.
Chris.
This is what happens when your number one health concern in the state is porn.
Jeremy.
Flicks it and then walks up and just kicks the living crap out of whoever.
It still throws me. I'm waiting for the and Julia part.
Yeah, I took it out, dude. I took it out maybe
a while ago.
I might make something new. I doubt it. If I'm being honest, I'm not making anything new.
Not right now, anyway.
I'm so fucking busy.
Hold on, turn on the music. Gotta...
Yeah, I can hear that.
Episode 415, for any of you who are wondering.
We're one episode.
Next week?
Next week's episode is officially our 8-year
anniversary. And we have a treat for you.
Oh, yeah, I forgot.
Yeah.
I talked to them the other day.
Oh, did you?
And they reminded me.
Oh, they reminded you.
I was like, oh, yeah, I forgot that was happening.
So we have a special guest for next week.
I live in the moment. I look at my calendar a day ahead. I'll look the night before. Okay, what do I have in the morning? So I can mentally prepare for, like, can I go in and get a bunch of work done, or do I have some bullshit that I have to deal with first?
Well, Brie knows, like, even the podcast stuff, even non-podcast, just hanging out as friends, I have to ask her, will you please send me a calendar update for this event? Because if it isn't on my calendar, either it doesn't happen or other things just steamroll over the top of
it. I cook and I do the laundry and Brie maintains my schedule for me.
That's a fair trade.
She really does.
I really don't. And you make it sound like that's all I do.
No, it's not by any stretch of the imagination.
But as far as the podcast goes.
I'm not even just talking podcasts. I'm talking about my personal life.
Yeah.
Brie also maintains a pretty strong schedule for
Brie
me.
Brie does a fair amount for me, too. Like the movie thing we went to a couple weeks ago. I'm like, yeah. Brie, can you send me an invite? Even though that wasn't podcast, I'm like, can you send it to me? Because
I won't remember. Yeah.
I just have too much going on. Well, like another example, yesterday morning, a client called to cancel for tomorrow's meeting. So I canceled it. And then he called me today and said, oh, things changed. We're back on. I pulled it open. I'm like, sorry, dude. You've
been
bumped
for
like 3 days in that 24-hour period.
Cancel meetings, bros and brodettes.
Once it's off the schedule, like other things just fill it up.
Thanks to Kitty for being at the thank you tier of the Patreon, and to our other Patreon members. I won't name you by name. You got to...
Got to go to the $5
level. You got to go to the $5 level like Mama Kitty. Yeah, thank you. And you can get, you can go join our Patreon, patreon.com/TNUP. It's actually free to join, for $1. You get access to our Discord. You can talk with us. Sometimes we ask questions before the show. We didn't this week because, we were supposed to have a really cool guest, this week. She was really excited to be on the show. She came to me. And then the place that she was at that she was excited to come on the show for, she's no longer at. That happens. We schedule guests sometimes 2 and 3 months out.
Right.
And so sometimes circumstances change and she's like, I might still want to be on the show for other stuff, but not right now. Like
as funny as it sounds, this is probably the third time this has happened where we've had somebody lined up and they are no longer working at the place they were coming to talk to us about.
Yeah, for one reason or another. And I don't know. I didn't pry if that was personal or there was a different business decision made. I don't really care. But we might try to get those folks back on at some point. Maybe not that person in particular, but that happens. It's just life. So we do have a special guest today that we'll get to here in a little bit. I think you guys will be very excited for this guest.
It's going to be awesome.
So one more episode and we'll be at 8 full years of episodes, which is pretty...
It's crazy.
Yeah, it's freaking wild. We got to be honest, the next month and a half is going to be really weird from a guest standpoint. We have a whole bunch of things happening, in our normal lives that are, you know, we try to record every week. Sometimes that's impossible. Sometimes one of us is out of town.
Sometimes all of us are out of town.
Sometimes all of us are out of town, as is the case on occasion. And so sometimes we have to pre-record some shows. We try to get guests to fill those slots, but they're all over the place in terms of when we can do them sometimes, because the reserved time of Tuesday evening that we all set aside for this, Sometimes that's not available. And so, you know, when we do pre-recordings and stuff, we may not have guests. So just a warning, we're going to have some, a lot of really good content, but there is, definitely going to be some, in and out with guests, I think, over the next few months.
We have some really exciting stuff coming up, like even just the next few weeks.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I'm excited.
Well,
for,
I think this month, because of our 8th anniversary, kind of the whole month has been.
And the adventure is going to be freaking awesome.
Yeah.
I'm excited for the adventure. I'm excited for our guest next week. Cause if you're going by, you know, if you were counting it like an anniversary or a birthday, our 8-year anniversary is actually like the 24th or something. What did I tell you?
Yeah, the 24th.
Something like that.
So the adventure will be that next week on the 28th/29th.
Yeah.
And then the guest, next week is a special
guest. It's our podcast 8-year.
By week count.
Yes. And then the next week is our actual, like, if we were celebrating it like a birthday. And so then the week after that for our adventure is
actually,
kind of an exciting.
I'm excited for our guest in 2 weeks too. That's one that I've kind of been working on for a while to get on. So lots of cool things coming up.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's a good month to celebrate our 8-year in for sure.
Yeah. So just, and hopefully enjoy it. We really like the feedback. So, you know, join our Discord via Patreon is the best way, to give direct feedback to us. We all sit in there all day. We're all pretty, I'm the most responsive probably because I actually am in Discord a lot.
Well, my Discord keeps turning itself off, so I'm not getting notices. So I got to keep remembering to open it up.
But, and I've got it on my phone and I'm in there talking all day to different people. So I see stuff in Discord a lot. But yeah, it's a fun way to get a hold of us. You can also reach out to us on social media. Instagram seems to be the most popular for people,
these days.
You know, we'll respond to Facebook and
the
Twitters or the X if you, are so inclined. I really haven't looked at TikTok. I have that vlogging camera and maybe we'll do some of that, over the next little bit here.
For the adventure, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so for sure for that. And we'll put some videos up and we'll actually put those up probably for our patrons way before we do everyone else. You know,
I think this weekend's adventure, I think we should.
We can
let them know, before
pre-post some of the stuff that we're doing. That's actually because we're doing it a little early. Our adventures aren't always actually like right before we record for them. So
it depends on
what we're doing.
It's
kind of
any time during the month.
Yeah. It just depends on what's going on, what we decide to do. So
sometimes the thing is, you know, only available a certain time or
limited time only. We're going to the gun show for our adventure. I'm sure there's one coming up, or the hot tub show at the Southtown Expo Center. I guess it's the Mountain America Expo Center now,
right? You might be able to do both on the same weekend.
That's true.
Yeah. It might be like an anti-abortion rally there as well. It'd be a really great combination of everything.
Anti-abortion, guns, and hot tubs.
Yeah, man. Why not?
It's like a Trump rally.
Have you seen the latest thing?
I don't know. What's
the latest thing is that he wears diapers, and so they're making t-shirts that say real men wear diapers.
Nice. Oh,
yeah. So he shits himself as he walks around in the, I don't really fucking care. Whatever. Okay. So let's get into some, other stuff.
Some stuff. So,
we didn't talk about this top thing either before the show. We need to talk about that.
Yeah, we'll talk about that later. So I got an update for the bees.
Yeah. Okay. So I just want to catch everyone up to the story here. Last week, Jeremy got his bees the day before show recording. We talked about him getting his bees in and everything, and we talked about how we don't think it's going to really snow again, and then
it did, and it's been snowing today too.
And then on
yesterday,
Sunday,
yeah,
and into Monday, it snowed, which is just serendipitous from us talking about it. We should have knocked on the damn table.
Yeah.
So I asked him, I said, do you feed them when it's like this? Are they okay? How do you know? Yeah.
So I'll give you an update on all that. So I put the queen in on Monday. Tuesday was horrible weather. Or no, Wednesday was horrible weather. I don't know what day was horrible weather. The weekend was bad.
Yeah,
Sunday
so it was really nice. It like built up to be nice during the week last week.
It was like Saturday was nice.
Saturday was nice.
Okay.
And then it got really fucking windy Saturday night.
So Friday, usually I check the bees on the weekend. It's kind of my weekend thing. But Friday, I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to take the lid off. I'm going to pull the queen box out, the little box that
comes in. Yeah, because she should have been pulled out by
then. I'm just
going
to pull that out, put the lid back in, I should be fine. So I open it up. So I'm not wearing my bee, nothing, because it was just a quick. So I open it up. I pull out the queen box. I turn around, I go to put the lid back on. I notice she's still in there.
She's still hanging. They did not eat her? Eat the plug?
No, they didn't eat her. But,
I mean the plug.
They had gotten so zealous with making the new comb that they'd sealed her in.
Oh God.
Oh no.
So I'm like, shit. So I turn around.
They're probably swarming you. Yeah.
Yeah. So I turn around to pull off the wax that they had put around it, and I put my thumb over it. But by then I noticed they're pissed. So I walked about the middle of the yard to kind of get away from
them. Did you leave the queen there?
I'm holding the queen. Okay. And so I get stung.
Oh, I'm sure.
And I'm like, crap,
how
now
many
that
times?
I've been stung, it like lets the pheromones out. So what I did is I ran back, I shoved the box back in and then backed away and then put all the bee stuff on, smoked it, got it all. And by the time I went back, she was out.
Yeah. At that point, you're like, fuck.
But once you've been stung, the thing is it sets off a pheromone.
All the pheromones come out, and they're like, that's the threat.
That's the threat.
Go kill it.
And that ended up being
so. Just one sting, though?
Just one sting.
You're really lucky there, buddy.
Because I know what I'm doing enough.
Error, yeah.
Obviously, I still got stung. But to only
get stung once where, like, the queen is, like, sending alert pheromones and the bees are pissed off and you get stung once and that's it. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Not wearing any gear.
Yeah. So once I set her back in, I left everything open, but I just set the box back in, backed off and went and geared up. Then came back with the smoke, pulled the box out. And like I said, by in that 5 to 10 minutes worth of time, she was out.
Okay, good.
So she got out. So I covered everything back up. So, I did it then because then the snow came and the weather's been horrible. So to answer that, I've actually ordered, it's called bee fondant.
Okay.
Because it's similar to fondant in shape and it's not fondant, obviously.
Yeah.
But, what you do is you put it in between the lid and the top. So it's covered in there, but they can feed from it.
Okay.
And typically that's what you'll do over the winter or if you're having a rough spring. And just because of the weather, I'm going to put it in. So I should be here tomorrow. I'll put it in.
You'll check and make sure the queen's like in there doing her thing correctly.
And by now I should know because there'll be larvae. There'll be all the signs. If she's not and I don't have the signs, then I'm going to get a hold of IFA and see if I can order another queen. I'm hoping we're good to go.
Can you still get a queen?
So that's what I've got to find out.
Yeah. That's crazy.
However, if there's enough of them, and we've lost the queen, they'll make another one.
Yeah.
It's early enough in the season. But because of the crazy weather, I'm not going to mess with it. I'm just getting the fondant. It's about 12 inches by 6 inches and like a quarter of an inch
and
thick.
It's not too cold. I mean, I know it snowed, but it didn't really drop below freezing down here. And so there's not a real threat of them dying from cold.
No, my worry is just in that chaos.
Because they can't get out and the chaos of the queen and like they might like freak out with her. And
yeah.
So she might be injured.
That's my worry. So I'm just going to put that on there so they don't have to worry about food. So it's funny amongst bee professionals, if you can even call them that. There's some that are like, don't ever feed them that because it makes them lazy. And I'm like, I'd rather have lazy bees than lose my hive again.
Yeah. Well, and I don't – it might make them lazy for a week or two. But you're not going to fucking leave it in there all season.
No. Well, and they'll finish it off in a month. If you just leave it in there, it'll be gone in a month.
Yeah, but you don't want to leave it in there for a full month if you don't
have to, right? It's funny, though. These different bee groups that I'm part of and, you know, just online bee.
Yeah.
Don't ever do that. Whatever.
Fucking bees are bees,
just
man.
Like mom groups.
Same as any other
group. Don't feed your baby like formula. Don't breastfeed your baby. Don't do this for your baby.
Neighborhood groups. Oh, that reminds me. So we're in the Kearns Township, Metro Township group.
We're not in a Metro Township now.
Yeah, but that's the name of the group. So that's what we're in.
We're a city now.
So we're in that Facebook group. And, you know, there's like, it's like a weird mix of what fucking people post in those groups. It's out there. But a few days ago, Bree's like, hey, they found a skimmer at Rancho Market. So someone had posted in the Facebook group that a customer noticed and pulled off a skimmer at Rancho Market.
The customer posted it.
Yeah. Yeah. The customer posted it on Facebook and like, then it made news, like Fox 13 picked up the story. but like Rancho's got a video of the people they think put it on there when they put it on there.
Well, because they would have, I mean, it's a cash register inside the building. It's not like, you know, if you're at the gas station and you can sneak one on or, you know, an ATM and sneak one on. Like, people are around all the time, so.
To be clear, you can still sneak one on in fucking broad daylight in front of the cashier and they have no idea. the cashiers are, just think about it. The cashier's standing there, like you and I are both at the checkout lane, and the cashier's having a conversation with you while I'm at the credit card machine.
Well, I guess
where's
that's
the cashier's
true.
Eyes? They're on you because she's talking to you, and I'm just like over there messing with the thing, which is totally normal for a transaction, and I've slipped on the skimmer in the meantime. They're very quick to do if you have practice, and these two guys looked like they knew what they were fucking doing. So,
well, and half the time your server's getting your drink and the cashier is, you know, busy with other things.
Oh, I'm talking about Rancho Market's a grocery store.
The grocery store.
Oh, right.
But like, yeah, so I just thought it was interesting. It's not the first time. And someone posted like after that, I've had to change my credit card 3 times in the last month. I'm like, well, of course you fucking keep going back to that store and it keeps getting stolen.
But I'm sure she's going to other places doing it. Never once occurred to her, like,
that's the place that's doing it. But like, for instance, this car wash up on the corner here, I will never ever. I know it's
under new management,
new ownership. Yeah. They've redone the whole thing. I will still never ever put my card.
The one time
those.
That I went there,
yeah,
got your card.
Yep, and I had to get it all fixed and had to get it all sorted out.
So so a couple things, just rules of thumb from a security professional. If you can tap to pay, tap to pay, because card skimmers cannot fucking get your card number from tapping.
Also, it's faster.
Yeah. Inserting your chip is another way you should go about it. Do not ever fucking swipe your card if you can help it. There is a reason merchants have been required to go to chips, because the chip does not store your number in a fashion that is readable, right? So the chip has all of that stuff tokenized. So even if a bad guy gets it, they're not going to be able to get your card number. But when you swipe your magstripe, that is the number one way. Because it's not encrypted or anything. It's just a number. Straight number on that magstripe.
There's not many places left that swipe. Most of them are tap or chip.
Yeah. Well, the problem with like some of like the gas station chip readers, you have to slide the whole fucking card in. And then it locks the card in place. Well, guess what? You've slid your magstripe through a potential skimmer. Because it doesn't take more than like a couple centimeters for them to put a reader that scans your whole mag stripe on the way in.
So those pieces of tape that are on there, like you should really check
the security tape
because it's on there to make sure that
no one's broken it and put a skimmer in place. Also, like if it looks askew, like don't put your fucking PIN into it because you're going to be putting your PIN number in there, your PIN in there. But yeah, generally speaking, use tap to pay if you can. Just without a doubt, just tap to pay. It's faster. It's a hell of a lot more secure. You should also probably have an RFID wallet, RFID blocking wallet.
The other thing you should do, and I know that like, I don't know that kids do this as much anymore, but like I still balance my checking account, even though I'm not
no
like,
one does that.
I'm not like writing checks and stuff, but I still like make sure that like I've recorded like where I've gotten stuff, whatever, like, if you're not going to do that, which I get people aren't going
to
do that,
pay attention
at least
to your bank account.
Like look at your bank account. At least once a month when the statement comes, take a look at it, go down the list of things and see, did I buy something there? Did I buy something there?
If you're not balancing it, you should be looking at it every couple fucking days.
I look at my account every day. It's just part of my everyday routine, but I have a business.
That's part of my everyday shitting routine. Actually, I get up in the morning as I'm taking a crap. I look at my bank account to see if there's any weird charges.
Yep.
I do mine once a week when I'm doing my bills and I actually balance my checkbook.
Yeah. And that's like once a month though, you're going to have some shit. You're going to lose a lot of money, especially if you're using your debit card for stuff like your bank account debit card. That money's really hard to get back. A credit card, a lot easier to file a complaint and get that.
So
stuff.
If you're traveling, you should always use your credit card. If you're buying stuff online or whatever, you should use a credit card.
There's a lot of protections there. The debit card is a lot bigger problem when it comes to those kinds of protections, just the way the banking system
works.
Just
because it pulls money right out of your account right away.
And this has been financial advice from the New Utah podcast. Also, RSL is doing fucking amazing. Top of the West, just shy of being top of the entire table. I think Miami has got them. Miami fucking scored 6 goals.
Well,
the other day.
Because freaking Chicho was at the top and then freaking.
Yeah, Chicho was at the top and then Miami scored 6 goals. So Chicho's no longer in the top. He's still up there for Golden Boot. But when Suarez gets a hat trick and Messi gets a goal and someone else gets a goal, like it's fucking like goals for everybody on that game. 6 goals, man.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Getting a hat trick and soccer is nearly impossible.
I will tell you, if Messi ends up getting injured or something, I don't think Miami makes it. But right now, Miami's looking.
Speaking of hat tricks,
unbeatable.
Avalanche and Dallas are up against each other.
Yeah, my Avalanche.
I'm sitting between these two boys right now so that they don't go, you know, get Jeremy, out of each other's
to be
throats.
Clear, Jeremy follows hockey a lot more than I do. That may change with the Utah hockey team.
Yeah, especially with us getting a team.
But, I've been an Avalanche fan since I started watching hockey when I was a kid because I got free access to Avalanche games. And Jeremy likes teams from Dallas and New York for some weird fucking reason.
Dallas, because I have a lot of family in Texas. So I like most of the Texas teams in various sports. And then New York Rangers, I've just been a New York Rangers fan forever.
Yeah. So, Dallas, took 7 games. The Avalanche took
they
a lot.
They came back. It was 3-0 and they slowly picked their way back and ended up taking out Vegas.
Yeah. So,
I'm happy, but I was shocked.
Yeah. So they're going to play Colorado. They play in Colorado, I think, tonight, right?
Dallas.
They play in Dallas tonight to
start
the series.
Dallas.
So, they'll start in Dallas here the game will be over when you hear
about the time you hear this.
But, Jeremy and I are fighting now.
That's right.
Cause Dallas is going to lose to the Avalanche.
No.
I'll probably still be an Avalanche fan, but I have to support the Utah team first.
Well, So whatever the new Utah team is going to be that will
Did you see they're going to put the training center at Southtown?
I saw that
they're going to take over a bunch of the unused Southtown space, and it sounds like build some more stuff out.
That's a really good idea.
Yeah. What a great use for that huge fucking mall that's if you've been in it lately.
It's dead.
It's not dead.
It's deader than Valley Fair.
That's not true. There are some areas of that mall that are still lively, but there's a good chunk of it that's very dead.
So I think that's a wonderful idea. Instead of going out to what little green space we've got left.
Yeah, like picking that up and going, hey, let's use this. They're going to have their offices there for the team, a couple of ice rinks there. That's a great decision.
And it's pretty center to the valley.
I don't know if 106 South is central.
Well, compared to Jeremy when he lives in Riverton.
Yeah, Jeremy, you live on 123rd South. The valley ends at like 140th South. So 106
to me, that's the middle
central.
Of the valley.
It's 2/3 if you count Bluffdale, but no one counts Bluffdale because it used to just be a prison and there's still not a lot of stuff out there yet. It's growing though. Holy shit. They're building a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
So it's more like 3/4 of the way down the valley, Jeremy.
That's true.
Not halfway in the middle.
True.
Intermountain Medical Center.
That's pretty much dead center.
That's the middle of the valley.
Yeah. So. Yeah. No, but I'm excited.
Marie High and Intermountain Medical Center.
Actually, that's not, I mean, really, if you think about it, because there's houses and stuff all the way to 134th, like 146th will be the end of the valley there. So that would make.
I mean, depending on how you look at it, there is no separation anymore.
It'd make us the middle.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say. It'd make like 62nd, 72nd, this area really.
Point of the
central.
Mountain is no longer really the. I mean, there's no separation. Now with the prison gone, that was the separation.
No, there's still separation.
As it's filling in, I mean,
there will still be separation because there's a gravel pit and there's a military base. And they are on either side of the freeway there. And so the point of the mountain is the separation between here and Utah County because you have to get over the mountain and then get into Thanksgiving
over
Point.
Over the mountain and over the freeway.
I don't know if that's song, but yeah, that will still be the defining line. But, yeah, there's a lot of stuff.
It's crazy.
At the end of the valley now. And they're building so much shit where that prison was.
I know.
It's crazy. Like every time I go out there, I see new stuff.
Yep.
So
it's filling in pretty quick.
Yeah, Mother's Day Sunday. So, if you're like me and don't give a shit about your mom, don't do anything for her. But if you have a wife and kids, you should be doing something for your wife, or make sure that your kids do something for your wife.
It was so funny. We were driving yesterday and Chris was asking me like when I wanted it. And I was like, you know, I kind of want it early. Like I don't want to do a dinner. I kind of want to do a winter.
So we're going to do 3:00.
But I was like, you should probably make sure that you tell everybody because like Cassie, and he's like, what makes you think that I'm discussing Mother's Day plans with you in the group chat? And I was like, oh, fine then.
Yeah, I always have those discussions with the kids privately. And then I need to invite Bree's mom because, you know, she's more of a mom than my mom is, even if Bree is mad at her.
Not mad at her.
Yeah. But anyway, So yeah, it's Mother's Day. Be nice. Don't be a fucking dumbass on Sunday morning.
Don't go to the gas station and pick up flowers.
Don't go to Harmon's on Sunday morning and pick up your flowers. Like, try and think ahead.
I mean, unless you ordered them and like intentionally are doing that.
Yeah, try to think ahead. I'm doing something for Bri on Mother's Day a week later, so she's not getting shit from me this year.
We kind of decided that we're leaving on Father's Day.
That's for the other trip, yeah.
So we're
not really doing a lot this year because we have a couple trips.
So there's a lot of stuff going on. I just found one.
A lot of brunches and crap.
Good friends at Cocktail Collective, Alexi, they're doing a charcuterie, cocktails and flowers for mom. That'd be kind of fun. I didn't look into it close enough to see what the cocktail was, but it'd still be fun. Go do cocktails and charcuteries.
Yeah. If there's tickets, which there probably aren't by this point, I would assume. She sells out quite a bit.
She sells out pretty quick because her space isn't real big. So it's like 20, 25 people, something like that.
Definitely a reminder to pay attention to their space because they do all these kinds of stuff all the time.
All the time. So. Usually, most weeks they'll have two or three events any given week.
Pretty hard to be steered wrong, honestly. So,
and those classes are a lot of fun. I'm sure Cakes by Edith is doing their Mother's Day thing they did last year.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of stuff going on. So just kind of.
Yeah. So, should we get to our guest?
Let's get to our guest.
Okay. So joining us this week, is Jeremy Gates, the owner of Salt City Home Designs. I think we did somewhat of an abbreviated,
the first three or four episodes. We kind of interviewed everybody just a little.
At one point, I think we did a little bit of a, who are you? What do you do?
Yeah.
But more than that, like a couple of years into the show, because it was in here that we did it, I think, in this studio. But we haven't really talked to you, Jeremy, I think, for a really long time. And I don't know that we got as in depth as I kind of want to go.
I don't think we did. I think it was just like kind of a 5-10 minute.
Yeah. So, obviously we know Jeremy really well. I know a lot of this story cause we've had conversations over the years.
You also help him with this stuff.
but I think it's, Jeremy's got a bit of an interesting story. And so I'm going to take him through.
Yeah. Just like you would any other guest.
Just like any other guest. And so the first question is, when's your birthday?
October 29th.
Yeah.
So I'm
Oh my gosh, me too.
I'm assuming Valentine's-ish.
Yeah, it could be like late January, but early February.
Into February, so that's kind of my guess. With my family, my parents were very traditional.
Number were you?
We want a kid every year.
What kid were you?
So I'm 3 out of 8.
So you're the third kid, so you weren't quite falling out like your youngest sister, which is Holly, right? Holly's the youngest?
Wendy's
the youngest.
There's two younger than Holly.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, Andy was, right?
Yep, Andy, and then Wendy's my youngest.
Also, Jeremy's sister, Holly. So what were your parents doing? Because they had Holly several years later.
Must have been Valentine's
the
Day.
The same day.
Same day. Must have been right around Valentine's Day.
Yeah, so Jeremy shares a birthday with his sister. I heard an interesting thing. So I was, it was in, I think, one of my courses or something, but they were talking about they were talking about collisions and talking about hashing of data and, there's a calculation that is out there if you do the math because there's only 365 days in a year for someone to be born.
Except for this year.
Okay. But generally speaking, there's only 365 days a year for someone to be born. And the magic number is like 57, I think, or maybe it's 54. But, basically if you get 54 people in a room, it's like 99% chance two of them have the same birthday.
That's so weird.
So even within my family, Jonathan and my mom have the same birthday.
Yeah. Hannah and Heather are like a day apart.
Right? Yeah. And she was C-section, so Heather did that on purpose. She wanted to make sure Hannah had her own day, but they wanted to schedule her
on her birthday
without knowing it was her birthday.
Well, they know because they have her fucking chart that has her birthday.
But they don't look at that when they're scheduling a procedure.
She probably went in to get scheduled for the procedure and they were like, when was your last menstrual cycle? Cause that's like just a default question they ask every fucking woman.
And then I want to say there's two others just within my siblings, parents,
So yeah, like in a group of 30,
yeah,
you're better than 50%. You're like 60 yeah. plus percent that two
no,
people.
No, because in our group
birthday.
Of friends, none of us have the same birthday.
No, but there's a lot that are like way yeah. close.
Like Sean and Vanita are less than a week apart. You and Jeremy
John
are like
and
a
Jody
week and a half.
Close.
Yeah. Josh and
Trevor, same day.
Not the same day, but I think
Tori and Josh are the same day.
Yeah, Tori and Josh are the same
day.
Yeah.
So,
within our friend group, even there's the same day.
I kind of didn't throw the crams in just because they don't come as often as everybody else. But yeah.
But they're part of the sweater party group for sure.
It's true.
They're just the crams have a lot of kids, and so the crams have
they're kids on
they're younger. Yeah, they're
so they're
the
just
of
at
the group.
They're just at the age too where like they can start leaving their kids home to watch each other.
Yeah.
Where they couldn't do that a few years ago. Well, so, but yeah, off topic, but I thought that was a really interesting, like statistical relevance that like it's that easy to have the same birthday as someone. Cause you don't really think about that, but like that's crazy. Like 50 some odd people and
you're a day off from my mom.
I know. And I'm the same day as the old Bree's sister.
I am the same day as one of my dad's brothers.
So if you get really bored, you can go to a website and you can look up how many people were born on your birthday the same day as you.
Nah.
Like, put in the year, the day. It'll tell you there's X amount. And then you can say how many are still alive. There's all kinds of crazy stuff you can look up. Anyway, that's not exactly
it. But you've just gone through life thinking your parents had Valentine's Day sex and they made you?
Yeah, that's what I've kind of pinpointed.
But they're having them like every year, basically like as soon as mom's ready to start going again.
So for
on
one
top.
Month out of the year, my two oldest siblings are the same age. So they are 11 months apart.
Wow.
That is
They did
terrifying.
Not fucking waste time.
Nope.
Your mom's like, all right, I'm healed up enough.
So those two are super close and I'm about a year and a half from them.
That's so crazy.
But then Jill's a year behind me, then Gina's a year behind.
Okay, like I don't like nothing against your parents, but in general, like people that have kids that close together, like that poor woman, your poor mother. Like
And your mom is teeny.
Yeah.
Like is she even fully healed? If they're that close together, if they're like literally like 11 months apart, so that means she had the baby. And in less than 2 months, she was pregnant. So
but to be
like,
fair, Jeremy started out that way. Aren't Maya and Julia pretty close?
No, because Julia's 99, Maya's 2001.
Yeah.
For some reason, I was thinking that they were closer.
So,
But like the 2 year, like even my brother, like 16 months is me and my brother. Like,
so
that's still reasonable. Like that, then you have what? That's like 7 months of like healing and. Whatever before.
So, but back in, I mean, the 70s.
I mean, yeah, you're just popping kids out.
That's pretty
right?
common. Like, I mean, I had plenty of friends that had 8, 9, 10 siblings all. So, I mean, it wasn't like unheard of.
Yeah, but I crazy, like within the same year is like.
That's a bit much.
Well, I just wonder, like, I mean, obviously, she's a willing participant, I would assume.
Like, I have a sister that was born within 4 months of me.
Yeah, but that doesn't count. It doesn't fucking count. Not at all.
I have another sister that was born within 3 months.
You know
what?
Your bio dad jerked off in a cup and impregnated 3 different people. So.
And I think Laura is
she's
also
really
the
close.
Same year.
Yeah. So like he had four
or the year before.
Four kids in a 1 year time span. But
if you're donating, you can have a kid a day.
One of them was natural. The other three were donated kids.
Donated kids. That is awesome. I'm a donated kid.
I know this episode's about Jeremy, but we might title it Donated Kids.
I really,
kids.
Really
so,
like that.
So
I'm going to call myself that.
I was born in Pocatello.
Yeah.
The majority of my family lived in Pocatello and still.
When did you guys
which
move?
Which side?
Back up slightly. So my grandma Gates.
So your dad's mom.
Dad's mom. Her dad was the Bannock Shoshone Indian, what do you call it? The liaison between the government and the Indian reservation.
Yeah.
And so it's funny because my grandma would tell the story how she thought she was an Indian because she was born on an Indian reservation.
With all the Indians.
And she lived with them.
And lived there until she was like 9 or 10.
That's cute.
So it's like Steve Martin the jerk.
Yeah.
Like when he's like, you mean I'm not black? Wow, that was a crack story.
Yeah.
You mean I'm not black? No wonder I don't have rhythm.
So they lived in Montana. And then they moved to Pocatello when my grandma was, I don't know, 13, 14, something mm-hmm. like that, because he switched jobs, but still within the Bureau of Indian Affairs. Anyway, my grandpa.
So you're responsible for Indian schools, native schools?
Yeah, maybe.
Okay. Yeah, it's your family.
No, but it's possible.
Anyway, your family's responsible.
My grandpa Gates, the side of the family, and I've kind of talked about this before, they came from Italy, all kinds of shady instances. Somehow, some way, he was given the rights to the train station in Pocatello, meaning the coal and water.
Wow.
Back then, if you owned the coal and water, you owned everything.
Yeah.
Because every train that came in or out had to pay for coal and water. And so, anyway, so that's kind of how that side of the family came to Idaho. My mom's side, they were converted Mormons from England.
I know your dad was cool. He was a Catholic.
So my dad's side is all
Catholic. Yeah.
So, but my mom's side of the family all converted in England, came over in the very, very early days of the church, went across the plains, and were assigned to Idaho when they got to Salt Lake.
Because, like, nah, you don't get to be in the chosen land. Go up north to that shitty volcano.
Go farm
area.
Potatoes.
So, yeah. So,
well, that wasn't even a thing yet.
So, when you back in the early days of the church, you'd show up in Salt Lake, and then they would tell you,
hey, we need you to populate the states all around
us. We're colonizing this area. So, they were sent to Idaho. So, anyway, that's
why. We're
going to
build a buffer zone.
Right. Like a compound. Yeah. You're part of the moat.
So, that's why Idaho. I was three when we moved, though.
Yeah, because you moved to Iowa.
Iowa. Right? My parents, mostly my dad, like, wanted out of Idaho.
Where in Iowa?
Des Moines.
Yeah.
So, okay. Southeast Des Moines.
I mean, basically everywhere in Iowa is the same. It's farmland or, it's like,
flat.
Pretend cities.
So Des Moines is similar to, like, Salt Lake, meaning it's a city. But we lived on the southeast end of it, kind of the outskirts, and within 10 miles or less of where we lived was farm country. So, I had a lot of friends that were actual farmers, and I know we've talked about this before, but, like, harvest in Iowa is legit harvest, like fall break.
Yeah, give you an idea of size. Des Moines, the greater Des Moines area, is like 700,000 people. So about half the size of the Salt Lake Valley area.
Size-wise, yeah, but it's a city. Like, I mean, you think farmland, but no, I mean, it's a regular city. Anyway, so we moved there till I was about 10, 11. Then we moved to Denver for 2 years. That was interesting because the steel industry collapsed in the mid-80s. So my dad was military, reserves, that sort of thing. But then he was also in the steel industry for, like,
his side job.
His side job. And so Pittsburgh Des Moines Steel owned the company my dad worked for. Huge falling out. The steel industry crashed massively in the mid-80s. Like,
oh, yeah. It was bad.
Like hundreds, if not thousands, of people lost their jobs. So my uncle had a condo in Denver, and he's like, hey, you can come live in it. So 9 of us moved into this 2-bedroom condo. Yeah.
We've heard some stories about that.
You do what you got to do, man.
Right.
Like,
So we lived there. It was kind of an in-between. My parents really wanted to stay in Colorado, but it just worked out that a job opened up for my dad and Utah. So we moved here, and the first house we lived in was behind Granger, and it was demolished when they put in Bangor, when they started putting Bangor. So I went to Granger, Bree and I. So that's what I met when we moved here. I was around 12 when we moved here. Bree lived kitty corner across the street from me. So she was one of the very first people that I met, and she was an outsider Catholic, and then I was an outsider just because I was a new kid. So we kind of bonded because we were kind of the outcasts.
Bonded outcasts.
But then Jeremy assimilated because he was Mo.
I assimilated relatively speaking. I went to Valley Junior High. Go Ligers.
Yep.
It's pretty much the
same. We went there when the Liger was there.
It was actually in.
So are your parents, so you go to, then you went to Granger, right?
Yeah, Granger.
And then you went up to the U.
Yep, up to the U.
And I'll talk to you a little bit about that because we were there at the same time. And didn't know each other.
I was on my way out as you were on
your
way. And Jeremy's current wife, actually lived around the corner from him, but like behind him. And so we all went to school together whole time.
But I never knew her.
I didn't really know her either. I knew her brother, her little brother's our age.
It was our age.
But like, I mean, even back then, those schools, I mean, you're graduating class like 1,000+
people. Yeah, 12. It was like 1,200 was my graduation.
Yeah, but I knew Heather's brother.
Yeah, but
I just didn't know Heather.
You don't usually know everyone at that level of school. So
because of the way schools are in Iowa, had I had started school here in Utah, I would have been a grade up. But because the way they do it in Utah, because of Harvest,
of Iowa Harvest,
they do it a little bit different. So I was a grade.
Oh, I guess I never thought about that because I'm barely in the proper grade.
Yeah.
Like I'm one of the oldest in. Yeah. I never thought about it.
Yeah. So had we have lived here, I would have started and been in the same
classes Heather.
But
I graduated with Heather.
So do your folks still live here?
Yeah, they're here.
Yeah, they're here in Salt Lake area.
Yeah, okay.
And a lot of your brothers and sisters were all here for a while, and now they've started to disperse quite a bit.
Yeah, so I've got a sister in Fort Worth. I've got...
Because you had Andy down there.
Yeah, he was in Houston. Mm-hmm. But my uncle's kind of in between the two. I've got some cousins. So my uncle... worked for NASA for, I don't know, 30 plus years, is mostly retired. Now he's a consultant for NASA. So he'll be in Texas
Got to be close to Houston.
But most of your brothers and sisters still live here, right?
So Jill moved.
Because Wendy lives with your parents.
Yeah.
Holly just got married. She's staying here, right?
Yes. Yeah. And she lives out by 78th. Tiffany lives up by Hill Air Force Base.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, they're still.
Yeah, so there's still a bunch here.
Here, yeah. And then,
I would say the majority still.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, okay. So, okay, you went to the U.
Yep.
Were you living on campus in 99 still?
Yep.
Or had you moved off campus?
I was in married housing in 99.
Oh, okay, yeah. So you weren't really
But married housing was kind of...
Yeah, it was like over by the VA, actually.
Yeah.
Right? Green Village or whatever it was
just down the street from the zoo, and this is the place.
Yeah.
Right on the corner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I would have never had reason to.
So we were there, but.
But like they use a big school, 30,000 plus enrollees.
Oh, yeah.
So like we would have never run. Plus you were,
I was going to say you guys didn't even have close to the same kind of major.
So I want to know, like, did you know when you went to school that you were going to go into architecture right away?
So to kind of back up on all of that. So when I was about 10 years old, I saw the movie Fountainhead. With Cary Grant, 1949 movie with Cary Grant, where he's an architect. And I don't know why at 10 years old that movie resonated with me, but there was something about it. So he was an architect and he wouldn't like give up his values and he could have like made a lot more money, but he decided to – anyway, you get the whole
cliche. Which is like the most mundane, like, oh, he's an architect with values. Like
I know.
But it sounds stupid, but it's actually
– It was the 50s though.
So much truth to that.
Yeah, it is something that you hold to, which is the craziest thing to hear. Because I've never actually asked you that. Like, what drove that decision?
So that I saw that when I was 10, and that kind of piqued my interest. Growing up poor, we never called a plumber. We never called an electrician. We did all of the work ourselves. I mean, so I also grew up in a house where we – tore out the bathroom and redid the bathroom. We finished bedrooms in the basement. So I'd grown up doing projects that even to this day I do tons of projects. So I really liked doing projects. And I remember, I was probably 12 or 13. We were driving by a housing project being built. And I remember saying to my mom, oh, I really want to build houses when I grow up. And my mom was like, well, you know, if you were an architect, you could design them and build them if you really wanted to. I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. So I'd kind of had some influences. So by the time I was ready to college, I knew I wanted to go into architecture. I wasn't completely sure what aspect. So as you can imagine, maybe not, there's very, very different paths in architecture.
I would say most people do not understand that.
There's same with engineering.
Engineering, I think people.
Because
there's civil engineers, chemical engineers,
people
mechanical,
preface
nuclear,
what kind of engineer you are. But usually with architect, you just get.
But within architecture, there's landscape architects, there's residential, there's commercial.
And even within commercial,
there's people who specialize in like manufacturing, and there's people that specialize in hospitals and temples.
I think generally speaking, most people think of architects as like, oh, the one architect can do everything. And technically you can.
Yeah.
But, like, there's a reason the architects even specialize, yeah, because
there's just
switching between a manufacturing commercial building and an office building and an apartment building are so vastly different in code and the stuff you have to pay attention to and how you space. Like,
exactly. So, for example, I've got an associate of mine, which, speaking of going to the U and not realizing it, I went to the U, and in talking to him, we probably graduated together. I had no idea who he was.
Yeah,
it was,
it's a big school.
It's about 10 years ago. We crossed paths. So, BJ Lund is his name. Element Architecture is his firm.
We insure them, and so, I know him.
BJ, so
he's actually my actual client.
So BJ and I actually went to school together. I don't know how the conversation came up, but we started talking about the U. Oh, I went to the U. And,
by the way, he spells his, architectural firm that's Element. L-M-N-T.
I know that firm.
Abbreviation. So anyway, so I've partnered with him over the years. For example, when he gets residential stuff, he just gives it to me.
Mm-hmm.
When I get commercial stuff, for the most part, I just give it to him because it's just so
different. And you want to make sure if someone's coming to you for something that you pass them to someone that's going to do a good job and that you trust.
Could I do commercial? Yes. Do I do commercial? Some. Have I done commercial? Absolutely. Could BJ do residential? Absolutely. Is he capable? Absolutely. But it's just
– it's a lot. Actually, like, I've watched – so – for those of you that have never seen Jeremy work, which is all of you, it's really crazy because you think of architects as like drawing on their fucking architectural flats and stuff like they used to have to do. And it's all in CAD now. And I've seen people use CAD for different things. And then I've watched Jeremy just fly through and do a design, not anything crazy, but like basically like do a whole fucking design in minutes sometimes because he's so quick and skilled and he's done so many things that he's able to move like full rooms from one set of plans to another like really quickly. And I might be underselling the amount of time that it takes, but like there's no fucking way I could do that. Like it would take me days to do the work that he does in
27 years.
Yeah, exactly. But like, that's why. Like, if you were to do a commercial design, it would take you a shit ton more time.
Well, cause he'd have to look up requirements and statutes and laws.
Yeah, and he doesn't have all that experience in that space to draw from to be like, okay, this is what we have to do here. And this is, you know.
So commercial, I've done some. I did, I don't remember, I may have told you guys, I did a funeral home up in Roy. I don't remember that.
I don't.
I did the Miners Museum in Magna.
So I remember that.
I did all of them, but the Beyond Glazed Donuts before they all went out of business. I did like three or four of those. So I do some commercial. However, most of the time, even when I do commercial, I still end up having to hand it over to BJ for parts of it and have him stamp it and do different things. So it depends, but that's really not.
So commercial is definitely a completely different bear than residential.
So Jeremy
too.
Does residential. Jeremy primarily does custom jobs for folks, whether it's remodels, a lot of remodels, right?
Right now,
most architects, that's what you're going to find unless they're house architects working for like Ivory. Right.
And Jeremy has done work for Ivory.
Yeah, I worked for Ivory. I worked for Wasatch Homes. I worked for Ents Homes.
And still do at times for various projects. But a lot of those really big firms have in-house architects now.
The big ones do.
During good times and during tough times, they let it out. Because it's just the way business works.
They just keep building the same house over and over again.
That's something I wanted to – I know we've talked about it like in general, but I really kind of want to dive in a little bit because, you know, we talk about Jeremy owning his own business, but I don't know that we talk a lot about the decision that you made and the things that you have done because
of that.
Well,
how it started out. Yeah. And
so going to school at the U, anybody who does architecture, engineering, doctor, any of that kind of stuff, you have to do an internship. It's pretty common. So I was probably three and a half years into college. I finally got my internship and it was at a relatively small local commercial architecture firm. So they brought me in as an intern. What I started out doing for the first probably 5 months is making blueprints. And this was back in the late 1900s where they were honest to God, real blueprints. Those don't exist anymore. I mean, it's very rare to find real blueprints. But what it is, it's called a Diazo machine. And it's got ammonia that runs through it. It's this special paper that has a film on one side. you take the drawing, line it up with the film, run it through the machine once or twice, and it actually creates the blueprint. So that's what I started out doing. And back then, even in college, it was half and half, half hand drawing, half a computer. And in the industry, it was about half and half. So we had some of the guys in the firm I was working with, like our landscape architect, only did hand drawing. So he'd draw on Mylar, which is like a plasticky kind of paper.
Yeah, people know what Mylar is,
But you could take that and run it through. So my job was, for example, we'd take a project. There was a retirement center in New York that we were doing, just as an example. It was probably 6-7 buildings. Each building probably had 60 to 75 pages between everybody, the landscape architect, the engineer.
So you're making 1,000 pages.
Right. So my job was to compile everything. So I'd have to get all the drawings from all the different people, put them all together, and then get them stamped. So what I would do is I would get all of the mechanical engineer together, all of his stuff together, then have him come in on a day. He'd stamp everything.
So explain to people. So stamp, what stamping?
So stamping, it's literally a stamp. A circular rubber stamp that's got the
engineer seal and license.
The license number, and they have to sign it.
And the reason for that is for construction, you have to have engineers sign off on all the structural stuff. And then if something happens, then you get to have the liability wars and who's ultimately responsible, if it's the engineer or the architect or the builder.
Ends up being a combination of all of them.
Yeah. But having the engineer give their authorization says, yes, this is structurally sound. If you build it the way it says here, it'll be good. And then usually people don't fucking do that because they're idiots, but that's a whole different thing.
Yeah. So then I would take all of those and I would start making the copies. Back then you'd have on average of 10 copies per set of plans. So that's 600 pages. So it'd take me weeks sometime to compile it all. And then, back in the day, each trade would come in and they'd have to check out a set of plans. And sometimes they'd have to pay a deposit. When they brought the plans back, they'd get the deposit back.
Because they're not cheap to make.
No. For bids and all that kind of stuff. I mean, it's very, very different now, but that's what I started out doing. So, I'd been there probably, I don't know, 5 or 6 months, something like that. And then they hired another intern, which means I got bumped up to red lines. So what red lines means is, the principal architect or the project architect has a meeting with the client. They take a set of plans that have been printed out and they red line them. They make all the changes, then they hand them to you, and you go in and make
all the changes.
All of those changes. And some of those changes trickle through 60 pages. So it's a lot to make sure everything gets done. So I'm doing this. I'm probably about a year and a half in. I haven't actually designed anything, but I'm absorbing a lot. I'm excited because it's, you know, this is what
you're
I
there.
Do.
You're in the industry. You're learning.
That's right.
You're learning.
I'm learning. And so the pivotal point for me was, most commercial architects, and we kind of talked about this already, really want nothing to do with residential. Like if you go to,
it's just so different.
If you go to FFKR, you go to some of like the big
firms. We insure them too.
In Salt Lake, they want nothing to do with residential architecture.
It makes sense. There's a lot more residential architecture. There's so much more
for
people
one thing, like,
involvement.
Yeah. Like Jeremy has to handhold a lot of people's hands. When you're doing commercial architecture, it's not as handholdy.
No.
And there's a lot of money for a lot less work.
Right.
And people don't bitch about how much they have to pay.
Because it's a corporation paying for it, typically speaking.
Yeah. It's just a business expense. It is just what it is.
So the owner of the company, calls me in one day.
By the way, FFKR's building is freaking so cool.
It is. So back when I was trying to get my internship, they turned me down like 3 times. That's not here nor there. But anyway.
Okay. So anyway, your guy calls you in.
Okay. So the owner of the company calls me in and he's like, hey, I've got, I want to say it was his cousin, something like that. John, I can't remember. He's coming in. He wants a house. Here's the layouts. And I'm thinking red lines. Okay. That's what I've been doing all this time. I'm like, okay. So I'll get going on the red lines. He's like, no, I'm going to give you the project. And I'm like, what? Cause I'm second to last man on the totem pole. You're going to give me the project. But I mean, I was elated and I'm sure he was just happy to pawn it off.
Yeah. He's like, oh, this dumbass is going to take a residential
on the lowest man on the totem pole. That way he's not wasting time or money. Anyway, so he gave it to me. So I got all of the prep stuff done and then I want to say cousin comes in to meet And, you know, I've got my tie on and my hair all slicked back and I'm all like feeling on top of the world. And, you know, he comes in and he's like, where's Bob? I'm like, no, he gave the project to me. He's like, what? He's like, yeah, he gave your project to me and this is going to be great. And you could just see the look of disgust on his face because he knew that his cousin pawned it off on like the lowest man on the totem pole. But I was super excited about it. I did the project. It ended up being, super modern, like glass and steel and all that kind of stuff. So, actually ended up doing a really good job. He was pleased. It went great. That was for me the pivotal point where I'm like, I don't really like commercial crap. I really like residential. There's a lot more to it. To me, you get to be a lot more creative. With commercial, you're just designing big squares.
You're designing boxes. Yeah.
Like,
structurally sound boxes,
hospitals, all that kind of stuff. And with most commercial buildings, you design the space and then you give it to an interior design firm and they place all the, like, the furniture and the cabinet. And all. So I'm like, I don't really like this. So as I'm finishing up school, that's when I decide I really like residential. So I switched gears. I actually got a job with Ivory Homes, which was funny because they're like, you're way overqualified. And I'm like, yeah, but this is kind of the road I want to go down. So I worked for Ivory Homes for a couple of years. I liked what I learned. Ivory Homes is a whole different discussion for a different day.
Well, I mean, like you talked about, we could talk about this because you told me, I mean, this was like a week ago, even maybe a couple of weeks ago. And you had told me like one of the things that's tough with a group like Ivory Homes is you've designed many homes that were in the Parade of Homes.
Oh, yeah.
You've designed homes that won Parade of Homes for Ivory Homes. Not a single mention of you.
Right.
As the architect, the lone architect that designed it.
So I was part of the team with Ivory. But yeah, when Ivory wins, Ivory, the company wins, the individual people don't. When I was with Wasatch Homes, that was probably the biggest ones with Wasatch Homes. The Parade House I did in 2007, 2006. The owner like said, it's yours. I don't care what you do. You got to come up with something for the parade. It won all kinds of awards, but yeah,
you don't get the accolades.
There's no, and I mean, and you get it. I mean, if you,
yeah, I mean, it's, you're working for someone else. I mean, that's the point of you get a salary. Like you don't necessarily get the notice for that stuff.
Right. And all along, ever since I was in college, starting my own thing was always the plan. So when the housing economy tanked and it kind of started in 2006, but 6, 7, 8 was when everything absolutely fell apart.
So and up to this point, right, because I want to talk a little bit about how you landed in the house that you're in, right?
Oh, yeah.
Because he also
worked down south and worked in like Nevada and stuff.
Yeah, but you were the house that you're in now was going to be a flip project, right?
Yep. So I worked for Ivory. A better job came up with Entz, and I ran their Nevada division. So everything from Mesquite to Vegas. So I ran their entire Nevada division. When everything crumbled, they completely dissolved the Nevada division. To my knowledge, they never brought it back. It's just St. George and Southern Utah now. So at that time, we came back up here because things had not collapsed here. Heather and I flew out on like a Tuesday. Mark, my good friend Mark Larson, had like, I don't know, 7 or 8 houses lined up for us. And he knew I wanted a fixer-upper, I wanted a bank repo, because that's typically that's always what I bought.
Yeah.
Get it fixed up.
And then flip it. You sell it.
Basically.
You
live in it maybe for...
And not a house flip like you see on TV where they take some house and they fucking spend 3 months on it and then they flip it and make a profit. Like, they were going to live in it. They were going to fix it up. They were going to make some changes.
I mean, he has done flips that he doesn't hasn't lived in.
But like, you know.
Yeah,
but
for my own personal house, the idea is usually a year. I plan on being in it for about a year, year and a half.
Yeah, and you've been there as long as I've known you.
So this house, we've been here, gone 17
years. And it's your forever home at this point, right? Like,
mean, this house, so we flew out on like a Tuesday or something like that. Did a marathon in 2 or 3 days and saw these houses and put down offers on like 6. Flew back. The house right now is the one that came up, and we really didn't care because it's like, I don't care. We're not going to live in there.
We're only going to live in there for a minute,
so,
a year or two, yeah.
Like the job I took with Wasatch as their director of architecture, the whole thing was, okay, you're with us for a year. After a year, you can design anything you want. We'll build it at cost. You pay for it at cost.
Which is freaking awesome.
And that's your house. Cause that was, you know, part of the negotiation. Yeah. But within that year, the economy tanked, things fell apart.
So, and this was the 07, 08 housing bubble burst that, yep. I mean, real housing bubble where stuff was super overpriced. Yep. And it just collapsed.
Like people, things are shaky at the moment, but they're, well, I would say, normal.
It's a whole different world. Cause back then, like the whole, like there's been a bunch of stuff that was put in to regulate some of this. Yeah. So back then what was happening is the banks were giving loans to anyone.
Anybody.
They were giving interest only or ARM loans where people didn't pay any interest and then they would balloon. And then like as soon as the interest rate had started going up, people couldn't pay for their house.
Yep.
And all the houses got foreclosed on. That's when the bank bailouts had to happen because yep. the banks had all these assets that they could no longer liquidate. Because they gave out really shitty loans to people yep. that couldn't maintain.
So when I came up from down south, I knew this was coming. So although I was working for Wasatch, I was very diligently setting everything up, getting my company.
Getting
the business set up, getting it all created. So, I mean, I knew what was coming because I had just lived through it. And I knew it was going to roll through Utah. It was just a matter of time. So probably the last 5 months I was with Wasatch, I went into my boss and said, take me off the payroll, no longer an employee, just sub out the work.
Me, yeah.
And I'll just bill per project. Of course, he was elated because then I wasn't making.
Then he didn't have to worry about unemployment insurance for laying you off.
He didn't have to worry about health
benefits,
insurance.
Any payroll taxes. Like, that's a much better deal for
and
a company.
And so I actually made a whole lot more money because I was just billing him either hourly or per project, however it worked out. But cash for cash, I made a lot of money. He saved a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
However, when everything tanked and fell apart, I was able to take all of the projects that were still going and see them all the way through. So anyway, it ended up, it was still sucky, but it ended up being decent for me. So that's kind of how I got started is
yeah.
When the economy tanked, it put me in a position. It was like do or die.
And I do want to talk about this. So we talked about the some foreshadowing with Fountainhead and like, you know, sticking to your morals. So Jeremy is what's known as a green architect.
Yep.
So Jeremy specializes in designing the Green New Deal type homes. But right. I mean, realistically, like homes that are energy efficient,
yep.
homes that are good on the environment, that sort of thing. A lot of architects will design like that, but then they fucking live in like lavish luxury and yeah. like don't give a shit about things.
Right.
But Jeremy, when we talk about it, Jeremy's an urban farmer. Like every one of his flower beds are gardens.
Yep.
And why is that?
You can't eat flowers.
Okay. But
I mean,
why?
You can.
But like plenty of people would have a small garden, but you literally have no flower beds that are just flowers, yep. right? They're all some sort of garden. And you, that was a conscious decision from you guys.
Uh-huh. Yep. Honestly, you can't eat flowers. It was kind of the way I looked at it. If you do it right, your garden beds and my garden beds, they're all like long and skinny.
Mm-hmm.
But they go all around our house. So when you drive by, it looks really nice.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Because they're not just haphazard.
It's not like one big chunk of dirt with garden stuff in it. It's a bunch of nicely laid out beds. And
yeah.
And I remember you telling me once, like part of that decision was, We were a married couple. We're in this house. We're starting a new business where it's just me working. And
we have kids
and like really like being able to feed our kids food
yeah.
from our garden that we don't have to pay for at the store
is a huge thing,
is a big deal from a savings perspective.
Yep.
And still to this day, you guys can a fair amount of food.
Yep. Well, and we share a bunch and
I mean, we're benefactors of,
yeah.
Beneficiaries.
No, so I mean, very much so those first few years when I started the company, I grew up gardening, my family gardened. That was, you know, but absolutely. And that was why we put so much of the garden beds or the flower beds in to garden so we could eat out of it.
And like Jeremy's done a ton of other stuff too. So for instance, they're not there anymore because they've redone the backside of the house a little bit, but talk about the heater.
So I built these heaters that go in your window. And what it is it's a plexiglass on one side and then it's a series of black tubing and then the whole inside is painted black. And then you put a little fan. I just took a fan out of an old computer on the front side. So it's not a whole lot to look at, but it goes in the window and you just cover the drapes. But what it does is it collects heat and it superheats it inside of this box.
And so for years, Jeremy had these heaters in his windows in the family room.
Middle of winter, that thing is kicking out like 200 plus.
And so they just flick them on. Heat. They don't have to turn on their furnace a lot. Like, they're gone now because he's redone the windows and stuff back right there. But, like, that's the kind of stuff. Like, Jeremy, when he first built the chicken coop, had a wind turbine that he built himself out of, like, old shit, basically.
So they were redoing this. So the section next to me that's newer was being built back in the day. There's a section of housing that was being built.
Where the guinea hens are.
Yeah. And they had the plastic sewer tubing, the plastic piping.
Yeah.
And they were throwing away huge chunks of it. So I pulled a chunk out of the garbage. But because of the shape of it, it's the big tube. The way I cut it, it made a perfect turbine, wind turbine, because it's already got the curve in it. And then you take the motor out of a treadmill, because if it runs backwards, it pushes electricity out. So I set up the wind turbine to push it out, and then I put up a battery bank system. So it ran my chicken coop, heated it in the winter, heated their water, and ran the lights.
For years. Until we had a really big storm and it just exploded.
Destroyed it.
Yeah.
But then chickens, we've had chickens for, it's got to be 12.
Yeah, almost as long as I've known you.
Years,
like, we've not done quite chickens. I remember when you first got them, but.
Bees, we've done bees for
a long time.
Just about as long. Like you were saying, in college, they teach about all that and green landscape and green architecture and using what you've got and planting, all this kind of stuff. And it, you know, for most people in school, oh yeah, that sounds great, but most of them don't do it. Whereas I actually quite enjoy it, and I like trying it and building this stuff, and some of it's worked great, some of it not so much. But I like trying it. It's been great. I mean, I love it. And so when clients come to me and they ask about these kind of things, I've got a firsthand knowledge. For example, I'm doing one up in Colville where it's completely off-grid, but they don't really know anything about off-grid. So I was able to kind of guide them with solar and how all of that works, and because it's all things that I've tried. So my current chicken coop is all solar.
And you've done rain collection and...
Yeah, because solar's improved so much, my current chicken coop has solar panels that run all the lights and everything in it. So yeah, I'm able to help people with that because it's something that I do and practice myself.
Yeah, so I'm curious, like what's the biggest change now that you've been in business for yourself for so long? I mean, you're at like 15, 16 years, what, 08 to now 16?
07 is when I started.
So. 15, 16, 17 years? 17 years. Yeah, 17 years. Jeez. So what is, 17 years, a long time. What's different now compared to back then, just in general for you?
So some of the biggest things is almost everything is electronic now. So even back when I started, I printed a lot, and I would have to print it
on that big ass old plotter, that
big
that's been
printer,
in place.
And either mail it or deliver it to the engineer so he could stamp it, like we talked about earlier, stamp it, sign it. The frustrating thing with that is any changes that came from the city or the client, you would have to reprint, send it to the engineer, have
restamp.
Now all of that is completely electronic,
which is awesome.
Like, there's no paper.
It's so much faster too, right? Oh,
yeah, and most cities, not all, but most cities have gone to electronic. They don't even want paper. So it's all electronic. So that has sped things up exponentially, because if there's a change, I can make the change, send it back to the engineer. He can restamp it electronically, send it back. I mean, we're talking hours.
So do you have to, speaking of cities, because it's something we talk about occasionally on the show, but like, you know a lot of code, especially residential code, really well. You kind of have to.
Yeah.
How do you stay caught up on that as you get into a new city, as cities change ordinances? How do you stay caught up on that yourself?
So typically something gets rejected is how it happens. So, like, for example, we had a big code change last year, and I knew it was coming. I'd heard, but all of my plans started getting kicked back, saying, you need to call out this code, this code, this code. So what I do at that point is I go to my master plan or my
where you keep all your templated stuff.
I go to my template, I update everything in there, and then from there on out. So that's a big one, is you just start getting
you start getting the rejections.
Your plans start getting kicked back. Another one though is you just do enough stuff in certain cities to know, okay, I'm doing something in Draper. They've got weird rules, but I've been doing stuff in Draper for decades. So I know, okay, this is a Draper house. I know I need to have all of these things on that most cities don't care about.
So let's talk about, I want to get into like you doing services for our listeners or for people in general. I know you've got a bunch of clients that you work a ton for. You do a ton of work for these different clients. And I don't want to ask you like what you charge, because I think, one, I think you charge too little. after I hear some of the stories of other stuff, I think you're definitely undercharging. But it's tough when you have long-term clients and accounts to raise rates in any significant way.
Our super secret whiskey meeting the other week when they were telling what some of those other people were charging.
Holy crap.
$130,000 for a set of plants.
Which is fucking outlandish. I mean, now it wasn't
I see that.
It wasn't just a small, but like still, like the 130 grand for a set of plants for condos.
That's kind of more on the extreme end.
But still, like that gives you an idea of like range. And I think a lot of people don't understand, you know, what I talk about how fast you do stuff. Part of that is because you have really good templates that you maintain you're able to pull stuff from.
I've been in business for 17 years, but my templates, some parts of my templates are 28 years old because I've just evolved. So
28 years old with 28 years worth of updates.
Of updates and changes and streamlining. Yeah,
they're nowhere near what they were 28 years ago.
No, when I took over for ENDS for the Nevada division, I took stuff I already had and incorporated it. When I became the, architectural director for Wasatch Homes, same thing. I took what they had, but I took what I already had and meshed it all together. And so it's just,
so you have a big database of stuff to draw on.
Yeah.
So like what, generally speaking, like you're going to do a residential, like let's say a new home for someone.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. What's your going rate for?
So as anybody who's doing anything with, residential or commercial, everything is based off square footage.
Mm-hmm.
So it all goes off of finished square footage. So I would say most new houses for a set of plans with engineering, you're going to probably start around $5,000 is kind of the starting point.
The very base starting point,
for a set of plans. And then it can go up from there. $30,000 is probably one of the bigger sets of plans.
Which is a big ass house.
Done. Yeah. That's like a Park City or like the St. George Parade of Homes that we did. A house like that's going to be in the $30,000 for plants, not $120,000.
No. Well, I mean, that's the thing. Like when you say square footage, like people forget that. Like if you're building a home,
like condos, that's commercial too. That's not
condos
residential.
Yeah.
So when you say 130, that's actually piss money for a commercial firm. Usually, like that's not because
this guy was not a commercial guy though.
You know, if you're building condos and they have like seven buildings in the complex or whatever, you only design one building and then you just copy it seven times.
Yeah. This guy though, he was a residential guy. He was like, you know, like when we went to a few years back, we went and saw those modern homes, those historic modern homes up in that neighborhood that were all by that one guy. It was that kind of dude. Like, oh, I'm like fancy fucking well-known architect.
So I know who he is and I'm not about to drop names.
No.
But he's very much so one of those hoity-toity.
But that's just it. Like the range is pretty dramatic, right? Yeah.
However, I've had people in the past that didn't want to use me because I don't charge enough.
Yeah, I mean, that happens.
I've had people who, you know,
you can't be good. You're not charging enough.
I think your $20,000 is just way too low, and I just don't think you're going to do a good job. And I'm like, okay. You have those people. So, for example, there was a short period of time where I worked with an interior design company downtown. I did some stuff for them. They were doing the Toro's place, as in Toro, the lawnmower. And their plans were probably $250,000 for the house plans.
Well, and some of that too, this is one of the things, you know, we've talked about, you know, privately, but like sometimes clients are a pain in the ass, right? Like and this is the difference. Again, this goes back to residential versus commercial. In commercial, you might have a pain in the ass person that you work with occasionally. In residential, every person, I mean, you are, with some exceptions, like, right, when you work for guys like Frank, like.
Yeah, but I would liken Jeremy's residential work for Frank in a commercial.
Yeah. Like this
realm.
Is like they know what to expect out of each other, blah, blah, blah. But when Jeremy does a private house, like we had a guy at that whiskey meeting that was like, hey, I want you to do, you know, my house for me. When you work with someone like that, it's a crapshoot as to whether or not that person's going to be easy to work with because they might nitpick every little fucking thing in the design. And you're like, you might be spending hours explaining why you had to put this wall in this one spot because the whole fucking house will come down without it.
The big thing is with residential, people are very emotionally tied to it.
Yeah.
Because it's their house.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're designing a stadium, there's attachment to it.
And realistically, but, like if you're working with an architect on your home, either on a remodel or on a new build, it's not just your house. It's most of the time, you're not doing that to flip your house. This is going to be the house you die in.
Yeah.
Right? Like that's generally speaking when you're working with a private architect at that level. So there's reason to be emotionally tied to it because you want to make sure that it's what you want.
I've had people get divorced over the process. I mean, not because of me. At least I hope not. But I've had couples get divorced over the whole process.
Because it is a process.
I've definitely had people separate.
That's so crazy.
Because of just how ugly some people can be when it comes to this sort of thing. And a lot of people don't think about it, but remodeling, even designing a new house.
It's stressful as hell.
Can bring out the ugliness.
Well, just even our closet. I mean, and we actually did amazing with this.
Do well with remodels and house project personally.
Yeah. He struggles quite a bit and I was surprised at how well he handled this one, but like even just this closet, like it was getting to the point where I was just like,
so like
this just needs to be done. And it was only 3 weeks.
Right. So I'm curious, like, cause you also do remodels, right? Huh? You do most of the remodels you do are basically new homes, to be clear.
For the most part.
Or big additions, like secondary additions to homes, but
or second stories.
But like, okay, for example, one of the things that Bree and I eventually want to do in this house is, put an extension to our second level where our bedrooms are above our garage.
Uh-huh.
Right? Because it's right in line with that level. It makes sense to expand that and build a big master suite or a primary suite, as they say now, because we're not slave masters. But something like that. Like what kind of, you know, that's just a few hundred square feet.
Uh-huh.
But there's some significant stuff that goes into that. So like when someone wants to do that kind of remodel, I know that's not typical for you, but like what would you tell someone that wants to do that?
Well, he told us not to do it right now because it wasn't worth it.
Well, yeah. So anybody doing a remodel or an addition of any kind, the first question I ask is, how long are you going to be in the house? If you're going to be in the house 3 to 5 years, I wouldn't spend a dime.
Yeah.
You're never going to recoup it. If you're going to be in the house 5 to 10, then I would consider it, but within reason and kind of – because you're not going to recoup it. And the problem is – you'll end up being the most expensive house in your entire neighborhood.
The cost per square foot to add that addition is not going to be made up in the price increase.
Right.
For years.
And so if somebody's like, no, this is my forever house, I'm going to die here, then I say, do whatever you want. Let your kids deal with it, with selling the house when you're dead.
Well, and then the kids don't even care because it's done and paid for at that point, probably. So something like that, what would you do, you know, charge wise?
So something like that, although
you wouldn't normally do something that simple though.
Right? I would. Well, it depends. It depends on who it's for. Yeah,
if it's for us, you would.
If it's for you guys, I would. So something like that. The thing that I would say, which I'm sure we've had this conversation before, is, there's a lot more structure involved with that. So I'm going to have to take off the entire roof of your garage. I'm going to have to frame up your current garage walls.
Because right now it's supporting a roof.
Yeah.
It's not supporting a floor and a bathroom. Yeah.
And you might have to put in supports in the center of the garage.
Yes.
Well, and there has to be a special kind of barrier because there's a garage below.
Yeah, fire barrier, shear wall. So most likely I'm going to have to peel off the outside And for a lot of homeowners, like, yeah, but I just redid the stucco. I don't want to do this. So there's a lot that goes into it, but it's like, okay, realistically, probably going to have to peel off the whole outside because I'm going to have to do a double shear wall.
Yeah. And you're going to have to take out the walls from our side.
Yep. Yeah. And so then that all has to be supported.
And then you probably might even pull the whole roof off so you can match the roof line across
possibly
the top. Yeah.
If not all of it, we'd at least have to pull off about 3 or 4 feet coming into
so
it.
So you could match
so
it
I
up
can
and
start yeah. there and come back over the other way. So, to go straight back out of your house would be a lot cheaper, structurally speaking, a lot cheaper and a lot easier than going over the garage because I have to beef up everything in your garage to be able to support another floor and a roof on top
of
that.
And the stuff in the back is new. So like our neighbors actually did that. They blew out the back of their house. So if you go into their house, I don't know why they made their front room smaller, but they made their front room smaller, but their kitchen
because it's only
is
for missionaries.
Gigantic. Like it's huge. It's got a great big, huge island. And then their family room is twice as deep as yeah. ours because they blew out the back of their house.
So, yeah. So with somebody like in this situation, I would have the conversation of, you know, if that's what you want to do, I'm perfectly happy to do whatever you want. But let's explore maybe if what you want is the bigger bedroom, let's explore going back. Extend your kitchen and down below, put 2 more bedrooms, then take your current upper floor, got the entire thing, and the entire upper floor is your bedroom.
And this is why you talk to an architect before you do shit like this.
So no matter what the project is, I explore, and I wouldn't say playing devil's advocate, but maybe a little bit.
But the dog stopped fucking barking loud enough to pick up on the mics, and the cat ran after her. But that's like... You know, that I think is one of the things that a lot of people don't realize, right? And so the conversation, that's part of why I wanted to have that is because I think a lot of people go, this should be really easy. And right. So they bring it to someone like you. And that's where a lot of the conflict kind of starts because people don't really have their expectations in the right spot for right. remodels.
Or Chris just thought that doing the closet thing was going to be really, really hard. And I was like, that was probably the best idea you've ever had in like the history of
it was an idea in passing.
He just threw it out there and I was like, I love that idea. And then I kept bringing it up and he was like, I should have never told you. And then our daughter decided to move back in. And then I was like, guess what? That idea that you said in passing, it's happening.
To be fair, it makes the whole room feel so much bigger with the closet like that.
So there's small things like that.
Well, because it extended the wall. And so the wall looks longer.
It doesn't have that closet door piled in there.
Yeah.
And it looks like there's more room. And then the office looks spectacular now.
Yeah. Chris goes in there and even though it's still got a bed and a dresser and everything, he's like, this looks more office-y for some reason.
Yeah. A lot more office-y.
So, but, I mean, ultimately, I'm not going to force my design ideas on anybody. And if that is really what you want, absolutely, let's do it. But I'm always gonna, and this kind of goes back.
But you're providing that reality of like, this is what all it's gonna.
It's gonna cost you 2 to 3 times as much to go over the garage as it is to go straight back. And if I go straight back, I can double your square footage because it's the main floor and the upper floor. Or if you're absolutely set on that, that's awesome. You can gain 10 feet.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of people, I have everybody. I have those like, holy crap, I never thought of that. That's awesome. Let's do it. I have some that are like, nope, this is what I want. I'm like, okay, cool.
Yeah. I mean, and I think most people think it would be really easy to extend over the garage. And like, that's like, I would have never thought
of
all that stuff.
Do it without doing the proper work behind it.
Yeah, well, that's a whole different.
Well, that's a whole different deal. Something like that, there's no way in hell I'd do that without permits. And I wouldn't do it. I would hire a contractor. And that's the other thing. Like, if you go to Jeremy and you say, I need a good contractor, Jeremy's going to give you a good contractor.
Yep. And I've got quite a few contractors. So typically what I do is I take who the person is, kind of their personality.
And match them with a contractor.
And I match them with a contractor. I have certain contracts. So like I have certain contractors that when you guys did your stuff, I would never give to you because just the way they are, the way you are, I wouldn't do that. But the contractor I paired you guys up with, I think did a great job.
It was awesome. Yeah.
You know, great price. And then even your railroad ties a few years ago, same thing, that particular contractor.
And he was the only one that would even touch it. And luckily he did because I had to fight with the insurance company about it. That was a disaster.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and then I also have my interior designer that I've worked with for about 15 years. So it just depends on what somebody wants and what level they need. And then, of course, my engineer, who we've had, I've had a couple members of my engineering firm that I work with on the show, but same thing with engineering. Depending on what you want and what you need, I have different engineers that I work with for whatever it is that we end up needing to do.
So thanks, Jeremy.
You are welcome.
I really enjoyed this one. This was a good, nice, in-depth discussion. SaltCityHomeDesign.com.
Yep.
Spelled weirdly too, apparently.
Salty Home Designs. I had to. So when I created,
did you fix it?
Well, yeah, not the wrong one. Not that the one I got for a penny.
The wrong one's still pointed.
Well,
to the
that's
right
not
place,
what I
so.
Meant.
No. So when I started I wanted it to be Salt City Home Design. That's at the time it was taken by some company in like New York or something.
Oh, I think I remember you talking
And so
about this.
I put an S on it.
It's available now.
Since then, that company's gone.
That happens. That's why you should always keep your eyes open on stuff.
So yeah, Salt City Home Designs with an S.
Yeah. So yeah, you can go out to his website. It works. The contact form on there works. You could reach out to us on the podcast too. Yep. He also has an Instagram, thanks to his daughter and my beratement over the years.
Yep.
Which I don't know why he never had one. But we'll make his website good at some point. After
and if you become friends with him, he does things like inspect your home for
maybe
you.
If I quit my second job or finish school, I'll have time for things.
Well, you'll be done with school soon.
The end
is in sight.
It is. There is light at the end of that tunnel. Here's our that's a long one on the back. Holy shit. You see that big paragraph back there? This one's fitting.
Okay.
It says, courage is knowing it might hurt and doing it anyway. Stupidity is the same. That's why life is hard.
There you go.
So, and it makes me just think of like taking that step to start your own business in the environment that we were in at the time. Like, it's crazy, but that's hard. And you could have also just been stupid for doing it. So
probably some of both.
For
a while, I'm sure it felt like it. Cause it's just now that you guys are comfortable and being able to do things and deal with like the emergency that you had at your house today without having an actual like,
you know,
or like having to have triple bypass surgery and take weeks off of work. And, I remember less than 10 years ago, like taking 2 weeks off of work would have killed you.
Oh yeah.
Or being able to surprise your wife with a cruise.
Well, that was when you guys first got together, there were times you guys got to dinner and we just couldn't.
Yeah.
I mean, we'd politely decline, but we just didn't have the money. Like we flat out couldn't. So
yeah. So, okay, now we'll read the back of this. What is the difference between courage and stupidity in your life? A big part of adulting is not crossing the line where your rebelliousness turns into recklessness. The people who ride this line most gracefully usually have a clear eye on their values and a good friend or two who will tell them when they're being a dumbass. If you can't decide if you're being brave or stupid, call a friend. Hint, don't call a dumbass friend, though.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I really like that one.
That's a really good one.
That might be one of my favorites for a while. Yeah. So I hope that, listeners, you enjoyed this, conversation with Jeremy. I think it's fun every once in a while to go really deep, on one of us. And I think you got to learn a lot about this guy that, he's our friend for a reason. He's on the show because we like him.
He's my friend first.
But, it's true. You can say that about everyone that Jeremy knows pretty much now. So. There are very few people that Jeremy spends time with that you weren't his friend first.
I mean, that's not true. He has, like, other friends.
Yeah. I'm not saying he doesn't have other friends.
Tyson. But, like, Tyson, I know.
Tyson's the other
but
one.
But I've known him forever, too.
Well, because
same amount of time.
Tyson lived one street behind us.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
So I've known Tyson about the same amount of time.
Yeah.
He didn't show up last week, that bitch. He was supposed to come, right?
He was.
Yeah. So, anyway, hopefully you enjoy this. Let us know what you think. Oh, that sucks.
That's why I didn't come.
Yeah, that's rough.
Oh, what happened? That doesn't even look like him. If you'd showed me that and I didn't know that you were showing me a picture of Tyson, I wouldn't
know.
That
does not look like Tyson.
He has conjunctivitis.
Ooh.
God, pink eye. He needs to start farting on himself.
He just needs to get rid of his kids.
His kids need to not fart on his face. It's conjunctivitis. Oh, pink eye. Anyway, thanks for listening. Hope you enjoy it. You can find us on social media at TNU Podcast. Go to our Patreon, patreon.com/TNUP, and join up. We appreciate everyone that does. It's
And I promise this month there are some things that you're going to know about sooner than everybody else.
We're going to share some cool stuff out on the Discord for our Patreon members. So, enjoy your week.